We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
Ian Williams, 95.7 The Game Insider, NBC Sports Bay Area, all guests appearing on the Dial Pad guest line. We bring it back to the NFL with our good friend Ian here with Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Ian, what's going on, man? Good to have you back on.
Fellas, man. What's good, man? It's good to have a feeling, yo. 2-0.
I tell you, 2-0 has been a really long time since we've seen it. I don't know if anyone has deemed the wins over Tampa and Cincinnati impressive enough. I think the Niners aren't quite in position to be picky about how and where and why they win. I'm thrilled that they're 2-0. I'm surprised they're 2-0. What do you think is the main reason they're 2-0?
I feel like, especially the Tampa Bay game, they showed some grit to go down there in the humidity and the heat and fight through it and beat that team and you know, pretty much control that game for the most part. And then you go up to Cincinnati, you know, oh, another team, you know, we're going to have to go in. You know, they had record passing yards. John Ross came out of nowhere, had a great game. We had to go up there and put down Geno Atkins and that defense. And they did that. And in the second half, I looked on film that a team quit. They made another team quit. They made Geno Atkins quit. They made that whole defense quit, just running the ball up and down the field. But the only setback was Joe Staley. I know that's the only setback.
We'll get to that for sure. Defensive line play. Let's just start with Bosa. What makes him special? Two games into a career,
I feel like he's starting to settle in and get more comfortable. The first couple reps that he had in Tampa Bay last week, you know, you can tell he was going down the center of the tackle, wasn't really on the edge, wasn't really working his moves. But now, you know, he kind of got into a rhythm. You know, he had a sack miss last week, but I feel like he's starting to get into that groove, and he's building confidence. You know, I saw the same thing at Aldon Smith in 2011, just going out there and continually building confidence. You know, Justin, you know, holding that guard for Aldon to come around and get those easy sacks, just built that confidence that nobody can touch him. And I feel like Nick Bosa, he's on the cusp of kind of feeling, you know, that kind of that nothing can really touch him.
How long, as a practical matter, does confidence last on a young team? For instance, as a hypothetical and only a hypothetical, if they lose to Pittsburgh this Sunday, is that confidence gone, or can you build enough momentum off two early wins to make yourself confident even in defeat, or does that take a longer time?
Well, you've built up so much momentum, and then to come home, you built all this momentum for this one moment, to come home and be able to have the Pittsburgh Steelers sitting 2-0, and now you have a team that you can go out here and beat and continue your streak of being 3-0, 4-0, so forth, or going to the bye week undefeated. And I'm sure that was the first goal of the season for Kyle Shanahan to set forth for the team. But I would say, you know, if they happen to drop this game, it would definitely be a huge blow to them, because I feel like, just like you said, they're a young team, so they're super confident right now. And maybe that youth, you know, kind of sets in if they do take an L on Sunday. But, you know, I think everything right now is pointing towards, you know, an easy win. You know, Mason Rudolph has a lot to prove, and I'm not sure if he'll be able to do that Sunday against the Niners, especially with the way this defense has been playing around the field.
So speaking of the defense, we got our first four quarters of Quan Alexander on Sunday, and he looks awesome to me, covers a ton of ground. And I'm just wondering, as a defensive lineman, that's got to be reassuring to know you got a guy who can cover so much ground behind you. I imagine you can be a little more aggressive, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's exactly what you just said. You can be more aggressive. So what do? They switch to the wide nine so that it can be super aggressive. They get in all four-point stances. You know, I don't want you shooting off the ball. I don't want you sitting back and reading like we used to do with the 3-4. I want you hot in the gap. I want you blowing plays up. And then, you know, if you do make a mistake or you're out of the gap, then you have a rangy linebacker like Fred Warner or, you know, Quan Alexander, who you just got from Tampa Bay. you know, all over the field, who can play sideline to sideline. So exactly what you said, that's exactly why they brought him in. So guys can go out there and play freely. You see, the first play of the game, DJ Jones and the Forest are back there making the play, getting a sack on the first play of the game. It's because they can go out there and play freely. They actually got a counter, and DJ played so hard into the play, he actually went across the center, and DeForest felt that, and then he came across. So it kind of worked out as like kind of a TE game or nose tackle game, and it came wide open because those guys can play so freely because they got a guy like that who can run sideline to sideline.
Ian Williams here, 95-7 the game. So if Bosa is, you know, the new flashy rookie, Buckner is the established veteran, Eric Armstead is the guy whose arrow is finally pointing up and he's proven himself in this league, Ronald Blair might be having the best season among them. And it might not be because Ronald's so good, but he's taken an awful lot of advantage of the attention that's being paid to those around him. He had 3 tackles for a loss last week. He had 4 solo tackles, 5 total. He was in the Bengals' backfield all afternoon.
If you were to look at his snap count, I'm sure his snap count was probably in the 20 to probably 35 range, as versus last year, DeForest getting, you know, 70 or 65 or 95% of the snap count. You just named multiple guys who can go out there and play. You know, Eric's starting to play better. Ronald's out there playing, but DJ's getting production for pretty much everybody in the D-line, and we're rotating a lot. You saw last week, down in Tampa, you know, we were rotating D-line. We had Sheldon Day in there, you know, mixing some things up. Julian Taylor, they're all getting some play time. So when you're on a smaller snap count like the second unit is, you can go out there and literally, you know, go 100%. You know, if you're DeForest, I used to see, you know, Justin and Ray go out there and play a defensive situation, and it would go, you know, 12, 15 plays in a row. I'm like, how are these guys doing this? It's because they're going like as hard as they can. But at the same time, they're getting tired, and we didn't have the depth then, so it eventually warned us. But these guys have depth, so guys can come in and freshly play and just give it their max effort, and not have to worry about, you know, having to play, you know, 12, 15 play series. They can come out after going hard on the second or third down play.
Ian, you brought up the Joe Staley injury. What do you think the Niners do to get through it?
They got their guy. You know, that's why you drafted school to come in for a situation just like this. You know, you had your tackle, your swing tackle get hurt in the preseason. That was truly unfortunate. But now, you know, your number's getting called, and now the kid has the opportunity to really go out there and solidify his job. Because if he doesn't do well, and then, you know, Brunfield comes in, because they're going to try Brunfield if school doesn't do well. And, you know, maybe if those two don't do well, maybe they go out and, you know, they try to trade for Trent Williams or somebody like that, or pick up somebody off the street. But this kid has an opportunity to really solidify his job going into next season, because if they don't do well, they're going to be drafting a tackle for sure, just to, you know, kind of replace and replenish that offensive line, because the kid had his chance, and, you know, you didn't prove you were worth that draft pick.
Is it hard at all to prepare for a quarterback that nobody's ever seen before, even on film, except for the little chunk of last week's game? Or do you take it as he doesn't know what we're going to do?
It's always hard. That's why, like, the first game of the season, you always get these crazy plays because nobody really knows what a team's going to do. And then when you get Mason Rudolph come in for very small sample size, he played very well. He had 12 for 19, a little over 100, and then 2 TDs. So he played decently well. So they have a small sample size to kind of go off of. But, you know, I feel like the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're a franchise looking for a new leader back there. You know, with Ben, you know, being older and being hurt right now, they're looking for a new leader. So, hey, they may give the kid the keys to the Lamborghini and be like, all right, just don't wreck it, kid. Go out there and enjoy ride. Just don't wreck it. So it could be a tough one. And this is a trap, sneaky game for the Niners that he could possibly go out here and just, you know, freely play. You know, if I throw, you know, Brett Favre, if I throw 5 picks, I throw 5 picks. But at the same time, I'm learning, and I'm a young guy, and, you know, they're invested in me. So this is definitely a tough game to really, you know, focus on as a defense.
Jalen Ramsey and Jamal Adams are both asking for trades from their current locations. Mm-hmm. The Niners, though, have gotten everything they've needed from their defense. So even though those guys might be upgrades, you feel like this team is content with what they're showing on the defensive side right now?
Yeah, I feel like they're content. I feel like they have a good thing going. They don't want to infuse any type of, you know, personality that could kind of wreck that locker room or wreck that team. But at the same time, you have to look at it from an analytic point of view. You know, you have out of the 10 guys in the room of the four, five corners and five or four safeties, whatever, 27 and 28 are the ages of seven of those guys. Six of those guys. So, you know, eventually, you know, those guys are going to start to age out. So maybe if you can bring in a young guy like Jamal Adams or a guy like Jalen Ramsey, who's, you know, 24, Jamal, I think, is 23. You know, a young guy like that, Jaquasi, 28, Jimmy Ward's 28, Richard's 31, K-1, he's 28. You know, you have some older guys in there. So, you know, maybe you bring in a guy like that to pair with Akilo and kind of learn under Richard and be that third corner. A lot of teams are going with the extra wide receiver anyway and taking that fullback off the field. So why not, you know, bring in an extra guy? You know, you're going to have to pay him. That's the only thing. You got George Kittle and you got DeForest coming up too, so. You know, those are things you got to be wary of. And I know they're looking at that, but I think they're okay with what they got in house.
Ian, you going to be stuck in a studio on Sunday, or are you going to be down at Levi's Stadium?
I'm going to be at the stadium, man. I'm going to be outside live. Nice. I'm there.
All right. Well, we'll see you down there, man. Looking forward to it. Take care of yourself. Always a pleasure.
All right, fellas.
Ian Williams, 95.7 The Game, 49er Insider. Again, he'll be down on the field covering the game for NBC Sports Bay Area this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be my annual pilgrimage to Santa Clara. This team might be good enough for me to go down there a couple of times this year. We'll have to find out together, shall we? 888-957-9570. Did the Minnesota Vikings save the 49ers from a Kirk Cousins experiment? And how much,
yes,
how thankful should the 49ers be about that? That is around the corner. We've also got at 5 o'clock, Peter King stopping by for his weekly chat. We're looking forward to that here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Sometimes the best decisions you make are the ones you don't make. Welcome back, little Damon Ratto and Kolsky for you here this afternoon. Peter King joins us at 5 o'clock. We got a Tuesday trifecta coming up at 5:30 as well. So do you think knowing that the Washington Redskins are 0-2 without a bona fide starting quarterback 2 years after moving on from Kirk Cousins, do you think that Daniel Snyder and Washington has any regrets not paying Kirk Cousins? Knowing that they've got Case Keenum and Dwayne Haskins as their quarterbacking tandem, do you think that they, if they could go back in time and elect to give Kirk Cousins $90 million to stay in Washington, that they would have done that knowing what they have now a year and a half after it happened?
I hope not for their sake, because I imagine that they believe... I hope they believe that Dwayne Haskins is going to be better, or at least as good, for a lot less money. And I don't think that's unreasonable, because I don't think Kirk Cousins is that good. Frankly, I think Case Keenum is a small step down.
Did the Minnesota Vikings save the Niners from stepping into the Kirk Cousins mistake? Do you think it's a mistake?
The Niners saved themselves. As Ray likes to say, we can't take it out of the timeline. And it's important to remember this, because people like to make this comparison. Oh, good thing the Vikings signed Kirk Cousins, because Kyle Shanahan sure wanted him. And look, lots of people believe Shanahan wanted Cousins. There's every reason to believe that was true. But it was before he had the chance to sign Cousins that he went and got Garoppolo. So he obviously made the decision that he would rather have Garoppolo than try to sign Cousins. And they went ahead and paid Garoppolo about as much as it would have taken to get Kirk Cousins to town, which is to say, I think the judgment of Kyle Shanahan is pretty clear: Garoppolo better than Cousins, and I would agree with him.
Well, don't forget though that Garoppolo was kind of thrust on him because
Cousins,
he called about Brady,
plan.
And Belichick said, "Well, what about, you know, a couple weeks later? What about Garoppolo? Are you interested?"
He wasn't
and
thrust
at that point,
on
wait,
him.
Well,
How does that make him thrust upon them?
Because I don't think they thought about Garoppolo being available. And then all of a sudden, magically, Belichick makes a call and he's available.
But that's not...
That's
Garoppolo becoming available, not Garoppolo being forced on the Niners.
I didn't say forced. I said thrust upon. Here, would you like this instead?
Okay, so I misunderstood what you meant by thrust, but to me, that's an opportunity.
But, I mean, they wanted Cousins until they got a better option.
Which was Garoppolo.
Yeah, but my point is they would have gone after Cousins.
Oh, I agree.
And Cousins still would have been a massive step up from what they had.
He was the plan. I mean, I remember doing the, I can't believe they just made that trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, not because I didn't necessarily like Jimmy Garoppolo. I still am always cautious of a player Bill Belichick is willing to walk away from, for whatever reason. But I've always been worried about that. But to me, the point was, Kirk Cousins is going to be the next quarterback of the 49ers. And they are just biding time to make that happen. And then they changed streams in the middle of that decision-making process, which made me think, why are they panicking? What have they done? What have they... I think they got it right. And I don't think Minnesota got it right. And I think Washington might have got it right. I'm just saying that the Kirk Cousins to the Vikings probably saved the 49ers from being stuck in with a just average as the day is long quarterback.
But again, that's not what happened, because they made the decision not to do the Kirk Cousins plan before the Vikings signed Kirk Cousins. That's all I'm saying. I think you're right about the circumstances in terms of they're better off having Garoppolo the way they have him than they would be with Cousins. I agree that the Redskins kind of dodged the Washingtons, kind of just dodged a bullet there. But I think we have to give the Niners credit. It wasn't that the Vikings saved them from themselves. They saved themselves from the Kirk Cousins plan by finding something better before they got there. And I think that's a credit to them. I think that's a credit to the Niners front office, that they weren't so married to the plan of Kirk Cousins, which I think we all agree is something they had in mind, but they weren't so attached to it that they couldn't see a better option when it presented itself.
Kyle Shanahan asked about what he's seen from Garoppolo through 2 weeks.
I think it was good for him to have some success, because that always takes a little pressure off. Everyone, whether you try to ignore it or not, you hear that stuff. And I think it's good that he did go out there, have some success. So we all know what he's coming back from. He did struggle at times the first week, but he had some good plays too. And yesterday he had a really good day, but there was also some plays he missed. So by no means was it perfect. I think he was happy with the result, but hopefully he's not satisfied.
Jimmy G on his head coach.
Great one. Makes my job very easy. His mind just, it's incredible just how he thinks. He's, two plays ahead while we're running the current play, and it makes everything so easy. And when he gets in a rhythm like that, it just puts everyone in a good position.
I think the most significant number I saw about the 49ers today is this one, that through two games in 22 drives over the course of two games, they have 0 3-and-outs. 0 3-and-outs for a team that couldn't convert a third down last year, it felt like at times. It feels like they don't even get to third down that often now. They're having so much success staying on schedule on first and second down. Third is routinely manageable, at least early on in any drive, to the point where they're not going 3-and-out. Now, for those of you who want to say, well, what about those interceptions? Those are turnovers. Those aren't 3-and-outs. Doesn't matter if it happens on the first play of a series. It's not a 3-and-out. There's got to be a punt after three unsuccessful plays to pick up a first down for it to be a 3-and-out. So let's not argue semantics. It feels like a significant number. It really does. Feels like it's if you're looking for proof that they're getting better, there's some proof right there that they're getting better.
I'm not sure that the issue of they're getting better has ever been in debate. I mean, one, they've won two. Two, they've won by a combined total of 34 points. Three, they forced turnovers and not created a ton of them. I mean, I think on balance, clearly they're better. I mean, it's sort of like stating the mega obvious. And I'm not saying that you are, but it's just, what's the part of their game that isn't as good as last, that isn't better than last year right now? I struggle to find one. It's early, but there's no evidence to suggest that they're not better.
291 yards in the first half alone. That was an improvement over the entire afternoon of football in Tampa Bay. 572 yards, the most prolific day of offense in 7 years for the San Francisco 49ers. Tuesday trifecta, not too far away. We've got Peter King as well. We're looking forward to all of that. Want to dive away from the NFL just for a moment to dive into the interesting mind that always is swimming around in between the ears of one Washington State head coach, Mike Leach. We didn't talk too much about how California has the state assembly basically voted unanimously to allow the state of California, I believe they voted on the bill is called SB 206, that it will allow college athletes to be paid for endorsements. The California Assembly has passed this bill, and now whether or not it's going to become a reality, it's going to change the way college football and the business around it is done in California, if indeed this would become a fact, not anytime soon. It'd be like the 2023, 2024 season. There would be plenty of time to lead up to and examine what all of the moving parts around it would be. Well, Mike Leach today talked about some moving parts. And remember, we are always on our own sides. Like, everybody is arguing their point. So this isn't Mike Leach talking about what's fair for college kids. This is Mike Leach talking about what's fair for a school in the Pac-12 if the biggest state in the Pac-12 now has ways to pay student athletes that are unavailable in the state of Oregon, that are unavailable in the state of Washington, that are unavailable in the state of Utah, that are unavailable elsewhere. There are Pac-12 schools. Mike Leach talking about recruiting imbalances. Should this become a reality?
If you create a recruiting advantage beyond what already exists, I think it's going to be very difficult. I think there'll be a huge imbalance and you'll destroy college football, and I think they ought to be very careful of that. And the other thing, if you can do stuff like that, I mean, surely if you don't like the way the guy's portraying something, you should be able to cut him on the spot, pretty much, I would think. And then, of course, then are we going to have a draft? Then are we going to have trading? Then are we going to have free agency? I mean, how far does all this stuff go? So I think we ought to be careful with that. Or maybe we ought to just have minor league football and have minor, go ahead and have minor league football, and then those guys can do whatever they want, you know?
All right, so an interesting guy brings up a few interesting points. And before we get mad and start bringing this into, well, you're taking advantage of these players and you're going to want to set up a system that always leads to be taken. Okay. But I do think he's got some interesting points to make, and I just want to ask you this question. Player X from USC looking to capitalize on a new stream of revenue that he has now available to him because this has become a reality in the year 2023. He gets paid $1,000 a week to invite everyone who's going to the USC game to come to the closest strip club to the Coliseum. Every single Saturday night, he is going to be there signing autographs at the closest strip club to the Coliseum. Come on out. I'm a paid endorser of the Foxy Lady. What if USC says, well, this is definitely not in lockstep of the image that we're trying to present of our student athletes and our university? No professors are allowed to endorse any strip clubs. We are not endorsing strip clubs as a university, but this young man is. And we would like to pull his scholarship now. Like, is that a reality that this could eventually steer itself into?
I think it might be an unintended consequence, but I'm sure you can. I'm sure the law can be amended so that, you know, that extreme probably wouldn't be allowed. But more to the point, what Mike Leach is saying is that I don't want to get screwed here.
Right.
It's not any more involved than that. It's not about the morality of whether players are being taken advantage of or whether they should get paid. It's, well, I want to pay my guys too. So really, above and beyond that, what he's saying is, can I have that law for me? And if he's going to talk beyond that, when he says it's going to destroy college football, you know what it might do? It might squeeze, like, the MAC out of business because they're losing money now with it. It might squeeze the Sun Belt out of the big-time football business. But that's about the structure of college football as organized by athletic directors. And I'm not moved by that argument.
To me, what Mike Leach said in totality is laughably self-serving. And
right, well, but I put that on the table before we had so let's not talk about that. We know that he has his own agenda. But I do think he brings up an interesting, like Ray said, unintended consequence if all of a sudden we have a brand new way to look at college football in the state of California that isn't available in 49 other states.
Here's why I disagree with him, though. A variety of reasons. For one, the very easy thing to say to everything he just said that I think is absolutely true is those are all great reasons for other states to get on board with this, not great reasons for California not to do it.
Fair enough.
The second thing is the notion of recruiting advantages beyond what already exists, because UCLA is just killing it in the recruiting game. All that sunshine in Brentwood, that they're just like rolling in superstar college football athletes all the time. No, it's ridiculous. Yeah, would there be an advantage if you could make more money here for the handful of kids who would be able to make money off their likeness? But I think certainly suggesting that it would destroy college football is absurd. And even suggesting that it would be such a significant recruiting advantage, I'm not certain that's true, because not that many kids are going to take advantage of this.
Well, that's assumed. But now maybe I can't just take the passion that would be in Columbus, Ohio, and
totally
say
different.
It's going to happen in Los Angeles. But I could tell you right now that there will be a small enough car dealer in Columbus, Ohio, to be interested in Ohio State's third-round punter as an endorser of a product. Now, I don't
know who's
got
a better chance of making that work? Fresno. Places like that. Fresno.
Big fish in a small pond.
Exactly. Derek Carr would have gotten all the Fresno car dealership ads, right? So if you're that guy, maybe that sways you to a particular school because someone nearby offers you an endorsement deal. But really, I don't have a problem with that. I like that idea. I would like these kids to be able, if they're not going to get paid for their work, to be able to earn something off their own likeness. As far as the last part goes, the unintended consequences. It's the most interesting thing he brings up, for sure. And I hadn't thought of it. And sure, it is a possibility. But does that really sound like that hard of a thing to deal with? I mean, the scenario you suggested, it seems like either a school would be able to say, you know what, we reserve the right to terminate your scholarship if you endorse any of this group of products that we are not okay with. And student athletes can then make that choice based on their own desires. Like, I don't think that's that hard. He's coming up with problems that are not that difficult to figure out.
No, but and I'm not taking his side here, but as a coach from a smaller school that doesn't even have Fresno's economic advantages, he is A, looking out for himself, and B, imagining ways that he would have to work harder and more creatively than he is now to maintain what he has. And I'm with Matt here. Okay, then be more creative.
It's tough up in Washington State, though. I mean,
it is. But
it's harder
to
recruit to the Palouse than it is L.A.
Okay, it's 100 tough jobs in college football.
But the problem with that argument is that a lot of this money would be coming from basically the NC2A's central fund, and they could distribute them equitably so that Washington State isn't impacted if they don't want to do that. I mean, the whole idea behind taking the money that the universities make is not so that the university can distribute that money to its own people. That makes the system that they have only sort of supercharged. The only way this works is if the money is that they take in is pooled and then distributed equally among as many schools as they want to have that.
But they're not even doing that. This is
no,
just
no, no.
About...
I know they're not doing that. That's what I'm saying, is the only way this could work so that everybody would sign up for it, including coaches, would be if you did that. The problem is the athletic directors won't sign up for it because the guy at Texas doesn't want to give any money to the guy from Western Michigan.
The guy on the text line says, simple solution. No, here's the thing. There's no simple solutions for this. This is like Brexit of college NCAA rules. But Every school gets the same number of endorsement spots, a fair and economic system based on a variety of factors beyond ranking and revenue. Well, here's the deal. We always say that this is going to be, we got to pay the student athletes, right? We got to pay these student athletes. Well, what about student athletes in sports that generate zero revenue? Are we paying them too?
No, look, the idea of paying schools paying athletes is incredibly complicated. Certainly, we're not paying non-revenue sports. I don't know why you'd even suggest that. Not you, but why one would suggest.
Well, now the state of California has said you can go out and seek your own endorsement deals.
Yes.
I guarantee you that there, if this were to be a nationwide situation, just to suspend reality, to a women's basketball player is worth 10 times her weight in gold in Storrs, Connecticut, as she would be in Los Angeles. You know what I mean? Like the UConn main product is women's basketball. So why would any woman then come to USC or UCLA if she could make more money in Storrs, Connecticut,
they're making no money now. And how many girls with an opportunity to go to Connecticut are going elsewhere?
Not only that, if you had 50 women who wanted to go play for Gino Auriemma, well, he doesn't have 50 spots. So it's not like he can corner the market on every player. I mean, the fact is, Mike Leach's arguments center around one thing. The status quo works for me. Any change to that status quo doesn't work for me. Therefore, I'm against it. And that's sort of what he's saying, because he gets closer to truth than most coaches do. Most of them will want to talk pie in the sky, ethics, morality. Mike Leach is saying, if you do that, I'll get screwed.
I respect
and
the honesty.
And I'm against me getting screwed.
I do honestly respect his direct honesty about this, that he's not complaining about morality or ethics or, what this... He's complaining about his recruiting problem.
Right. Recruiting imbalance is the only prism he's looking at this through.
And I get it. I just think he's
self-serving.
Yeah.
So here's...
But that separates him from exactly zero other coaches.
Except that he's willing to say it.
Does separate Mike Leach from the rest of the coaches, at least in his own conference, is that there isn't probably another coach in the Pac-12 who could do as good of a job breaking down what would happen if Pac-12 mascots actually popped to life and battled with each other. Here is Mike Leach going team by team through the conference, evaluating the chances the mascot would have in a battle royale.
What kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We got to consider that. I'm going to say the Wildcat's out. The Trojan, does he have a horse or is he on foot? Does he have a bow and arrow or just his sword? The Bruin, definitely formidable. Another bear up there at Cal. Tree, I imagine that tree's going to get chopped down. Unless we're going to go with a bird and somebody might get pecked or something, I don't know. A duck might lose interest and just fly away and get out of there, which may be good advice under the circumstances. The husky, no chance.
I love how he's just dismissing the tree and then brings up, you might get pecked by a bird. We haven't even begun the explanations.
The beaver, we'll see how long that beaver can hold his breath. The ute, again, we're back to... is he on horseback? Does he have a bow and arrow? Did he trade for a rifle? I mean, because if that ute's got a rifle, there's some definite problem. You know, you'd have to get one of those Harry Potter activists to read up on how you kill a sun devil, because there's a lot of outside stuff there. As far as a beast alone, a buffalo's going to be pretty hard to tangle with. I mean, a buffalo's utterly outstanding. The cougar will find a way. Clear-minded and crafty, a combination of stay out of harm's way and attack when you get your chances or your openings.
Okay.
The breakdowns are phenomenal.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's break down the breakdown.
Okay.
How is a cougar so clever, and yet a wildcat he dismisses out of hand?
The cougars...
They are clearly, essentially the same thing.
Cougars are known to be much cleverer than wildcats, right?
Oh, much cleverer.
Much cleverer.
Yeah. Many of them have degrees.
Well, don't tell me that a Husky doesn't have a fight or flight reaction in it, too. It knows when to pick its moments.
He's right. The Husky's in trouble. The Cougar and the Wildcat take out the Husky. I think a Cougar is significantly bigger than a Wildcat, traditionally speaking.
What's a Harry Potter activist?
I think he's just saying someone who knows about magic.
An amateur wizard.
Yes. Okay. He needs someone who knows about magic to address the Sun Devil, and that's absolutely right. We don't know what a Sun Devil's powers are.
Yeah, we got a pretty good idea. They have to do with heat.
That's scary. The Sun Devil could burn up.
I'll take the Sun Devil. You guys can have everybody else.
I think that's right.
I'll beat you with shade.
With the tree?
I'll beat you with shade. The tree could beat the Sun Devil.
You know what?
So maybe the one shot Stanford has. Because the Husky's going to pee on the tree too, right?
Oh, no. The sun is going to burn the tree to the ground.
I've never seen a tree spontaneously burst into fire. I don't think it's happened since the burning bush.
It's happened a lot in California last year.
I don't know that you've ever seen a Sun Devil in action, so you just wait.
Basically, it's the power of the sun only with a malevolent force.
Is it coming with a trident?
If he's got a trident.
Does the Sun Devil have a trident?
Does that trident like shoot sun fire out of it?
I can't imagine any other reason why he would have it.
Agreed.
I mean, if he's having trouble walking, he'd have a crutch.
Sun Devil wins.
Yeah, Sun Devil easily wins. It's not even close.
What about 707 texter makes a good point, though. If it's just if they can play the waiting game, the tree outlives them all.
Absolutely. Trees live longer than when the sun burns out, because when the sun burns out, the trees are done.
That's a good point.
We're going back.
The Sun Devil might still win. I think the Sun Devil is the way.
I've literally yet to hear anybody explain to me how the tree is going to live 6 billion more years. Which is the estimated life expectancy of the sun now.
I have a...
It might be 4 billion. It may be shortening. But.
Great text from a local OSU alum. Beaver takes down the tree easily.
Wow.
Okay, fair enough.
Very
all
true.
I know is...
He was talking about drowning beavers.
Yeah. But it's all barbecue. Once the Sun Devil gets ready to go.
What I really like is that photosynthesis played a role in today's show.
Indeed.
888-957-9570. Who would have thought photosynthesis would have played a role in today's show? Someone's like, this might be the greatest debate in radio history. You should have been around for ilk-esque and like yesterday. That was a pretty good one, too. When we come on back, let me tell you, we're not too far away from saying hello to one of the best journalists covering the NFL. Peter King joins us at 5 o'clock. A Tuesday trifecta, not a taco Tuesday. A Tuesday trifecta comes up at 5:30. It's all brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Peter King joins us 12 minutes from right now. We're going to be talking about everything that happened in the NFL last weekend, what might happen this week, setting us up for a huge weekend, week 3, right around the corner already. We're 48 hours away from the next Thursday night game. I don't know. Have you guys seen this Monday night schedule coming up? Given some recent injury developments, Monday Night Football is now the new Sunday Night Football. And when I was a kid, Sunday Night Football, when ESPN picked up the Sunday Night package and having the NFL on cable TV was like a big deal for the very first time. This was when I was in college. This game sucked. Like every single Sunday Night game was like Colts Oilers. I mean, like really. I mean, it was bad. And it feels like the Sunday Night schedule is the Monday Night schedule is now the old Sunday night schedule, and the Sunday night game on NBC is what the Monday night football game used to be.
Yeah, but I mean, look, that if you look at the Monday night schedule this year and you remember, sorry, my line about the timeline comes in again. When they made that schedule, it was 7 months ago, and a lot of injured guys were healthy. The other thing, though, is when people look at a Monday night schedule and go, that's a good game, that one sucks, that one sucks, that one sucks, that's a good game, that one sucks, they always manage to make exceptions for their favorite team and go, well, that could be interesting. That's why I don't worry too much about whether, you know. I mean, the Thursday night games are the ones that are the dumping ground and always have been.
That's the one.
Because that's the one where the bad teams say, why don't we ever get to be on national television? And this is the league's way to keep them quiet. That's why you get color-fast uniforms for Titans, Jaguars.
I would just say one thing. Depending on how you view Browns, Niners, I'm generally with you, Ray, but if you look at this year's Monday night schedule in particular, there's a strong argument that they didn't schedule a game with two competent teams. Well, let's just say this. They scheduled two games featuring two competent teams in the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks. Because Washington's there this week, clearly not competent. I don't think they knew any either the Broncos or Raiders were competent in week one. Clearly the Jets are incompetent. The Bengals looked bad from way before the season. Browns, Niners, I guess you could say, is pretty decent. Lions, they knew would be terrible. Jets, they knew would be terrible. Dolphins, they knew would be terrible. Giants, again, they knew would be terrible. Like, there is at least one team they knew would be terrible in most of these games.
And a lot of people will tell you that last year's Monday nighter between the Chiefs and Rams was like the greatest Monday night football game ever played because of all the points scored. No one could have saw that game coming because nobody thought Patrick Mahomes was going to show up and be the best quarterback the game's ever seen from day one.
The other thing, though, and it has to be remembered here, too, is that ESPN will take a Washington game because it'll get a number. May not get a great national number, but it'll get a great number
for ESPN.
For ESPN and on the Eastern Seaboard. They want the Giants, even though the Giants blow. They don't mind having the Jets, even though the Jets blow. They'll take games from uninspiring teams if they think they can get a number with them. They can get a number with the Houston Texans. It's hard to believe, but they do.
A lot of people.
They don't get
Texas.
A great number with any team on the West Coast. They got most of their number last year in that Kansas City-LA game by people who wanted to see Mahomes.
Yep.
And that's how those games actually get scheduled. It's not by trying to guess 7 months ahead of time who's going to be good and who's going to be bad. I mean, when the Browns-49ers game was scheduled, they were pretty sure that the 49ers weren't going to be very good again. And they weren't sure about the Browns, but they knew that Baker Mayfield would get some eyes. And that's really how that breaks down.
I also think they understand that the Niners, even though they are doomed to that West Coast existence, that's one of the biggest national brands there really is, too.
Not when you're coming off a 4-12 year, though.
You're right, but you did have Garoppolo and the dangling of the promise of it finally is going to come together, and last year was something that shouldn't have happened but for injury. Like, they still had an illusion, if nothing else, to sell.
They get a lot more buzz than the average 4-12 team.
Hell yeah, they do.
I do think, though, to Damon's original point, it's especially noteworthy or noticeable, I guess. Maybe not noteworthy, because I don't know that it's on purpose in any way. But it is extremely noticeable that when you compare that Monday night mess to the Sunday night schedule, I mean, the worst team you'll see in the first 11 weeks of Sunday night football is probably the Colts or the Steelers, and both of them were expected to be a lot better when they had their starting quarterbacks 6 months ago. So
it's clear who's getting the first draft pick and who gets
right.
The game, and it's clear who's getting among the last draft picks. In Monday Night Football, you picking last.
Well, no, ESPN has complained about NBC getting better games for a while.
And in part, they flex later, too, which gives them an even better opportunity.
Yeah, but the truth is that NBC has one other advantage, which is that it gets all the bleed in from people watching the afternoon games. And so it becomes part of the viewing day, in which Monday night doesn't have that because Monday night just floats alone and Thursday night floats alone.
Do you think that the NFL sees ESPN, the fact that it's not a network station, that you can't tune it in on your antenna, as a reason not to let them take the best game of the week?
No, because they love the NFL Network, which is an over-the-air TV.
But they never give it good games. They give it games, but they're the crap Thursday nighters.
Well, because the NFL Network...
It's the worst playoff game, right?
The amount of money that CBS and NBC spent and Fox has spent means that the NFL can't start saying, well, no, we're going to take the really good games and just put them on our network, even though you spent billions for the rights. And the NFL is totally, as far as the NFL Network is concerned, there is no bad football game. So they're glad to it's show football. You anything, right.
right? Right.
Well, I mean, they get to keep all the money. But the value of the NBC package is that it gives them one more network with their toe in who's part of the Super Bowl rotation. And what NBC pays for is you give us a representative Sunday night as part of the thing that we pay for. ESPN is not showing a Super Bowl ever. That's what ABC is there is for.
Right.
So NBC basically uses that piece of leverage to say, we want a better schedule than the Monday night game. And it has proven to pay off because the Sunday night game always gets a better number.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Mike Leach.
The Beaver. Well, we'll see how long that Beaver can hold his breath. The Ute, again, we're back to...
See, this is why sometimes I shouldn't... There was someone on hold who wanted specifically to talk about that. I thought I'd go back to that. And, of course, as I go back to that, the person who was on hold hangs up. You quitter.
That's the key that we're about to come to you. That's how you know. It's your hint. We're going back to the Mike Leach sound just for your call.
Listeners can't know the ins and outs of radio.
Yeah, you're right. That's complicated.
And I don't know the ins and outs of radio.
Fair point.
I barely get it in my car in the garage every day.
I think every listener can hear that, though.
Oh,
that's,
I don't
that's
care.
That's readily apparent.
As long as my check comes, I don't care if they all hate me.
888
Hate me now, you worms.
888-957-9570 is the number. If you do give us a call, don't quit on it. We'll get to you.
The text here, will this be the first year the Thursday night games will be better than the Monday night games? No.
No, because there's still Thursday's not enough time trash. To get ready. Players are just banged up, bruised.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, no. Players hate the Thursday game.
Not Thursday games will always be the worst. Them.
If look good, feel good, play good is part of the formula, no one feels good on a Thursday night. So it's always going to struggle. That game is always, always going to be pointed uphill. Giants made the big move today to bench Eli Manning. They are elevating rookie Daniel Jones, who they took sixth overall. And I guess this brings to an end a 15-year-long career for Eli Manning. I mean, look, whether you liked him, whether you didn't like him, whether you thought he was significant or insignificant or was part of their success or stood in the way of their success or rode the team's coattails to success more than they rode his coattails to success. Like, the guy's a football lifer who gave the sport everything he had and missed one start 2 years ago when he was healthfully benched for Geno Smith.
If Eli Manning deserves credit for one thing, it's that. To be able to play every Sunday or Thursday or Monday for as long as he did is nothing short of a remarkable achievement.
Not only do you have your opponent wearing on you, but you got New York City leaning on you hard.
That's impressive. Other than that, I'm unimpressed, but that is impressive.
And I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss to wrap a bow on his career. The Giants aren't very good. I think Daniel Jones has at least an average chance of getting hurt at some point.
Oh, that's
and
fair.
I don't think they're going to go to a third string quarterback to try to get themselves out of it. I think you'll see Eli Manning again.
Boy,
and
though,
not in a kneel down situation.
Two questions. First of all, are we sure Eli's hanging around? And second of all, are we sure Eli wouldn't go somewhere else if he were given an opportunity?
Is there another team that might be interested in what he's got left? Would Eli prefer to go out with some dignity
Steelers?
As the Obi-Wan Kenobi of the quarterbacking situation that Daniel Jones is going to be stepping into? Does he have a sense of mentor-apprentice thing going on? I wonder what Eli's relationship is with Daniel Jones. Is all he has been to Eli is the object in the rearview mirror getting closer, or is there sort of a relationship between the two where he's taking the player under his wing in any way, shape, or form?
I don't know, but I think that since Eli Manning knows that under any circumstances short of injury, he's done in New York, there's no value to him being a creep to Daniel Jones. Because one of the things that the Manning family is very good at is making sure they never step the wrong way in a public relations situation. So it does him no good to try to undercut the guy who just got the job, because he's not getting it back.
Welcome to your 5 o'clock hour.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.